You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of July 8th, 2020, and I'm never eating another mushroom.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And ooh, it is that time, ladies and gentlemen. We are finally discussing, debriefing, in fact, The Last of Us 2.
The Last of Us Part 2. It's a prestige game, George.
Oh, excuse me. Okay, excuse me. This is the latest from Naughty Dog, much anticipated game. 7 years in the making since the first Last of Us.
Is it scary that feels like it just came out yesterday?
I mean, yeah, dude. Like,
that's, I mean, it really doesn't feel like a very long time ago, but when I think about it, it's like, wow, like that game did come out a long time ago.
We'd been doing this podcast for 3 years at that point, so...
Yeah, it's... Yeah, wild.
If you are new to the show, welcome. This is a good one, I hope. we will be doing this in classic debrief fashion. We will talk a little bit vaguely about our thoughts on the game, mostly focusing on the mechanics and the sort of minute-to-minute gameplay experiences. We'll give you a hearty and big spoiler warning when we move into the story elements, and then we will spoil much of this game. I think... The most interesting aspects are very much on the narrative side in regards to The Last of Us 2. So yeah. I do think that will be the chunkiest meat of this particular episode. Yes. Before we get to that, I should say, just a refresher, I believe you and I both really enjoyed the original Last of Us. There were a lot of issues, especially when transitioning between the stealth gameplay and then the action gameplay. But for the most part, I think both you and I really liked it. And we thought it told a very fascinating story about what it means to be a father figure in this extreme situation.
I mean, I'm almost scared to re-listen to it because I have this inkling that I talked a fair amount of shit about the first game.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do think that the... And maybe it's also just me coming off of this game. I do think that the story and the acting and the fit and finish and all of that stuff is... Every time you play a Naughty Dog game, I ask myself, oh man, you know, how could they get any better than this? I mean, this is just so artfully crafting and then they do it better the next time.
Yes.
And so I think they continue to do that. But yeah, I mean, the first one for me... My guess is I would say something snarky like, this game is great when you're not playing it. And I kind of felt that way about that first game. There were aspects that I thought were cool, but I remember being pretty frustrated by the end of that game.
Yes, I would agree. I absolutely agree. We were excited for this one, though, because both at the very least, you and I enjoyed Uncharted 4. We thought that was sort of the best advancement in the mechanics of... Naughty Dog games, I would
say.
That's
my favorite Naughty Dog game, for sure.
I mean, even now, I think a lot of even playing The Last of Us 2 reminded me how good Uncharted 4 is from a gameplay experience. So, with that background set, Scott, what did you think of The Last of Us 2?
7 out of 10. No, I definitely enjoyed it more than the first game, easily.
Yes.
And I think the reasons... There's a few different reasons, but I think there's a lot of, there's more space in this game. There's both just in terms of the environment where you will go several minutes without really getting into a battle, or the battles will be 3 to 5 enemies versus 50 or something. And I really think the game benefits from that space because... the longer you spend with a combat mechanic, the more you start to see the holes in it. And I think this game is actually much smarter about hiding some of those holes based off of how they design the encounters. And it let me relax because I could just take in the, I mean, this game is stunning. I mean, it's, I'm usually, I'm not the type to like gush about how good a game looks, but just, I mean, and I also, I'm not ignoring the fact that Naughty Dog is a pretty controversial developer in terms of crunch and how they, yes, you know, yeah, treat their people. And, but regardless of whether you agree or disagree with how they run their studio, the output is just incredible. It is incredible. It is hard to believe. Yeah. And I was constantly amazed by the minute details. Like, you know, like when you're crafting your weapons, every single one of those stupid animations is bespoke. You know, they created a separate animation for every single little upgrade where you're like tweaking the gun barrel and using a screwdriver, and like, and that whole thing could have just been a menu.
Yeah. Naughty Dog revealed on Twitter a while back some animation tests that they had run, showing off some of the animations of the zombies or the animation of an NPC jumping off of a fence and the way that they stumble on the ground. It really is exquisite work. All of the animations of the game are pretty stunning. I think going back again to Uncharted 4, where there was so many more contextual animations that were built into interacting with the environment around you as you were taking on the enemies, you could see them apply a lot of those same learnings.
Yeah.
I think for me, some of the most exhilarating experiences in the game were sort of surprising animations where, you know, I would hit someone with like a huge axe as they were turning a corner, and it just was, it looked like a perfect cinematic surprise attack. Or when you decide, I can't handle all of these enemies right now, I'm just going to run. And you run for it, and people are bursting out of windows, will grab you and slam you to a table, and you have to quickly sort of jerk out from under them.
Yep.
Those moments to me were absolutely exhilarating, and they look incredible. I mean, it really, it feels as though the expense of the game is on display when it really feels like the entire world is reacting to you in a totally naturalistic way.
Yeah. And I mean, to get even more specific, I think there are portions of this game that, again, it doesn't quite go as far as Uncharted 4 does, which is interesting. But I really like that the opening section of the game where you are you switch between horseback and on foot and basically the explore the city. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was actually one of my favorite parts of the entire game, and it happens pretty early. And it was
I've just heard that a lot.
Cool thing. You know, you know, there's not a big flashing guide marker on the screen. You actually do kind of have to use the map and look at the street signs and, you know, listen to the dialogue and stuff. It's just, it made that sequence enjoyable because it really combined the exploration with the combat versus just having like a very fancy but still very basic funnel. You know, most of the encounters are funnels, but this one felt much more open.
Yeah, I really wish they had brought back that segment. I think the open world section is some of the most highly praised among the people that I've spoken to about the game. It really does feel as though that was almost a proof of concept to a totally different kind of game.
Yeah.
And it proved that you could do it, and then they just, you know, didn't have the time or the budget or the capacity to really imagine or create that experience given the system that they had at hand. But I think you're right, that segment feels very good, and I think part of it is because you have this space where it is a little bit more metered out and self-directed, which a lot of the rest of the game doesn't really have. The other thing I would say regarding spaces is some of the just mechanical changes. This game adds the ability to dodge away from clickers. I don't believe that's a mechanic that was in the first Last of Us, and it really makes that experience of fighting them and creating space between you and shoving them away much more fluid, and combat feels better as a result. I still don't think that the clicker combat always works as good as you want it to. And I suspect they've just sort of reached that wall. They hit that wall of what you could express within that space and know it.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly why there are fewer clicker scenes in this game.
Right.
They do add some new types of clickers, minor spoilers for clicker types or enemy types, but there are enemies in this game that are more reminiscent of something you would fight in Resident Evil. And in those moments, it feels like they're trying to call back to the RE experience where you're sort of standing and holding your ground and shooting at these things, because the game's not really built to be any other type of sort of zombie game.
Yeah.
So it's, I think this game is better just from a purely mechanical perspective than the first Last of Us by leaps and bounds. I do think it hits a pretty hard wall in what they're able to express with the systems they have at hand, though.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about that, too, because I played the game on just the standard stock difficulty level. I forget what it's called. It's called, like, moderate or medium or something like that. And I've heard people go both ways on it. Like, I've heard people say, oh, if you bump up the difficulty, it feels much more like a survivalist challenge. Or if you bump down the difficulty, you can really enjoy the flow and just get caught up in the story. But I enjoyed the combat. It's just that I feel like, for whatever reason, they made a design decision to have a lot of one-hit kills.
Yeah.
And it totally breaks the momentum of everything, of the battle, of the story, of... I wish, and I don't know what this would have done to the game, but what if you had one free out with a clicker? You know, if it grabbed you, you could get grabbed one time within the span of, 30 seconds or whatever, and you could still survive. Because I feel like it's such a weird stark punishment. And it's not that way when you're fighting other infected or humans, because one of the things that I enjoyed this time around was that the shooting in this game just feels sloppy in a good way. There's a lot of sway on the aiming.
Yeah, a lot of sway.
If you fire at someone, they kind of flinch and they're like, even if you don't hit them, they're startled by someone shooting at them. And so that can even interrupt them while they're trying to shoot at you. So like, there's just a certain chaos of the battle that's actually pretty fun, but it's then undercut by someone just rolling up on you and stabbing you with an ice pick, it's a weird thing where it's this combination of learning by trial and error and just being flat out punished and having to restart an encounter, which really took the wind out of my sails when I was playing it.
Yeah, there's not always a lot of clarity as to when that can or cannot happen, because oftentimes Ellie can push back or fight against a clicker. Right. I think sometimes it's health-based. Sometimes I suspect it is because... I've triggered this once before. Now it happens again. It's not always entirely clear when you can and cannot fight back. That's absolutely the case. I also think that there are times when it waffles back and forth between very forgiving. You might die and have it reset just moments before you were eaten.
Yeah.
Or you might die and have it reset back to the beginning of a sort of pretty wide section when you had taken just, 15, 20 minutes meticulously, silently taking out 15 enemies, and then all of a sudden you're starting from scratch again.
Right. How did you end up specking in this game? Because I really feel like they just kind of quintupled down on the ability trees in this game.
I mean, I always tried to go the stealth route. So I was sort of quote-unquote specking into... being able to move faster while stealthed, spotting people from further away, upgrading the bow when you finally get the bow, and taking that stealth approach. By virtue of having limited resources, you must necessarily sort of expand out. So at some point I started just upgrading kind of all of my weapons as I could get them, because I knew that no single weapon was especially reliable. The other thing I found frustrating about the guns was that when you are in combat, your enemies will basically be waiting for you, and the moment you pop your head up, they will shoot you. And they have pretty much 100% accuracy, which is really, really annoying, because it's not like a normal shooter where you can sort of pop your head up or blind fire. I wish this game had a blind fire, though I understand how ludicrous the idea of blind firing and hoping to get a kill is, but there was definitely a sense that I needed to sort of pop my head up, intentionally get shot so that they could reload and I would have an opening rather than, really feeling like I could run and gun, So as a result, I found myself not being that enticed by using the weapons or upgrading the weapons that were like pistols and whatnot at all, unless I thought it had like an immediate impact, right?
Yeah.
Shotgun, great go-to, because I knew if someone came around a corner, I could just blast them very quickly and they'd be instantly dead. But the idea of popping up, waiting for my my sway to calm down so I can fire my rifle gives the opponents way too long to shoot back at me. And when they're shooting at me, you know, I'm basically under suppression. It's very difficult to aim, and your screen is, and you might get knocked down on your ass and have to sort of shoot from the ground. Right. It's not a fluid experience to be shot at and then respond in the way that Call of Duty or any number of other shooters are, which is fine. I don't necessarily criticize the game for it, but as a result, I think it made the gun combat less exciting to me than just trying to be stealthy and dealing with combat that way.
Yeah. I did a similar thing, but I spec'd a little bit more towards just flat out survivability because I was so annoyed by having to restart or having this weird kind of dissonance of Ellie dying, but that's clearly not the story we're telling. So like, it just highlighted my ineptitude basically. So I was like, I'm going to spec in a way that minimizes the number of times I fail. And so I poured a lot of the points into, being able to heal faster or being able to, craft more quickly if I needed to, you know, get more bullets or, you know, anything that could help me, regain or end a battle faster, because I just didn't. And you know, the consequence of that is that I never really saw a lot of the bow and arrow tree, you know, like the explosive arrows and all that stuff, because I was spending so much time ensuring I was survivable in a fight. But I thought that stuff was interesting, especially because there was way more of it than I thought there was. And you really could specialize in your weapon. You know, if you really liked the rifle, there's a lot of stuff to do with it.
But I mean, you're going to run out of ammo though, you know?
Yes.
I mean, how many times, at some point, every time they added a new weapon, I was like, fuck, one more piece of ammunition I have to find, you know?
Right. I mean, that's actually, that point is one to bring up, because I feel like this game is almost headed into the immersive sim area where it's like Dishonored or Bioshock, where you go into a building, you immediately start rummaging through the drawers of the toilet or whatever and to try to find stuff, and it kind of makes you look like a maniac.
I think that's kind of what I mean by hitting the wall of what this game can be, right? Like I think that there is a pretty tough limit that you have upon yourself for making a game that is so stealth focused, that is so resource driven, but then conversely has these moments of extended action. I don't know what, you know, you look at Nathan Drake and that dude will come out of combat with just an AK blasting while he's swinging on ropes and like punching people in the face. And, you know, it's very swashbuckling in the way that it is exhibiting action. Yeah. The lethality of the world that Ellie inhabits is way higher, and you just never have that swashbuckling manner. And so combat, when you actually trigger it, it can be... it's exhausting. It can be really draining on you, like just from a mental capacity of, you know, hiding and trying to perfect your shots. And I do think that it becomes exceedingly tedious at various parts throughout the game. We'll talk more about it in the storyline, but I think that this game is easily 10 hours too long. I think it never justifies its length, and I think as a result, those limits are reached earlier, they're reached sooner, and it really becomes overbearing.
I am very excited to talk about that, because it feels like the story needs the length it needs, but the gameplay suffers for it. And I mean, I think there's definitely parts of the story that they could have truncated or cut out.
I mean, in my opinion, the story also suffers for it.
I think so. Let's tie this off before we go into spoilers. Is there any? I mean, like, what else is there to say? I mean, I think overall, this is like my second favorite Naughty Dog game.
Yeah,
you know.
I think you probably like it more than I do. I think that probably at best this game is okay. I think that there's a core idea or a core theme that they wanted this game to be about. And I think that the entire game is in service to it, and it's admirable, and they really swing for the fences, and I think mechanically it's the best version of The Last of Us they could have made from just a pure mechanics perspective.
Yeah.
However, I think that the seed of what makes this game unpleasant for me is sort of built in on a foundational level because of the type of story they want to tell. They wanted to tell a story about violence, using only the vocabulary of violence, and with a system whose expressiveness within that space of violence is itself limited. And I think as a result, they were doomed from the start. I don't think that there's any way this game could be the home run that I kind of wanted it to be, because the very foundations, I think, were... They put their eggs into a basket that I think had no hope of carrying all these eggs. It just, they could never have done it. And it kind of, to be honest, it left me really sad and disappointed when I finished this game, because I was just reminded that, you know, the first Last of Us, while not perfect, felt like a singular package and needed no sequel. I don't think even that a ton of people wanted a sequel per se, but I certainly know that that team felt pressure, and it just feels like this was an opportunity that they didn't have to take. They didn't have to make this thing. And it makes me especially sad knowing the amount of crunch that that team, you know, has been over and received rightfully a lot of criticism for putting their team under, you know, making a game that I think was kind of doomed from the start, from my perspective.
Man, that is an elegant, eloquent statement there. So I think this is where we say, this is where spoilers start.
Spoiler country. Here we come.
This is, we will speak explicitly about the story beats of The Last of Us.
Yes.
So where do you want to start then?
I think we should start, I want to start with the first big shock, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, spoilers, they kill Joel.
There's Jews in The Last of Us.
They kill Joel very early in the game.
Yes.
And it becomes a story of revenge. And I should say, actually, before we get into the story, I don't know how much you've paid attention to this, but of course the internet trolls have come out in force against a lot of, especially the Abby character in this game. I think there's a lot of just hatefulness and misogyny.
There's some ugly shit around this. Yeah, it's kind of wild, because I looked into it after I finished the game, because I didn't really want to see it beforehand. And maybe I'm just old and have mellowed, but I mean, what is people's problem?
You know? Dude. in a weird way, it goes both ways, right? Like, so for example, good old Jeff Gannata. Love the guy. Big fan of Jeff Gannata. He posted something that, I don't know if you saw this, you probably did. He compared The Last of Us 2 to Schindler's List. And like, nobody wants to go over this whole looter narrative, can games be art shit, all over again in 2020. Not this year of all years, Jeff, please. But lo and behold, you know, like it got brought up again, and it is not a very well put or elegant statement that he made, even if his heart was coming from the right place. People criticized him a lot. But then one of the things that I was annoyed by, Jason Schreier, the hate bear of the internet.
The heel of the internet. Industry. Yeah.
Posted a single tweet that said, "Video games are too long." Neil Druckmann, the creative director of The Last of Us 2, commented on it. Troy Baker commented on it and left a comment that was a quote from, I think it was Roosevelt. About like being a fighter in a ring. And it's just like, who are you, Troy? Like, the game is fine. You put in some of your best work. You know, like Troy Baker, Ashley Johnson, like Laura Bailey, everyone kills it as from a voice acting perspective. They did not need you to come to the defense of The Last of Us. You know, it's okay that I can take this criticism. So I just want to bundle all that bullshit up, because it's like a sort of big red herring on the conversation about this game, because none of the things that I criticize have anything to do with the voice actors or the effort that some of those folks put in into there.
I mean, I think it's more of a commentary on just where we're at in the year 2020 and just how frazzled everyone is. And everyone is just raw. And in another year, everyone just been like, okay, cool, nice opinion, whatever.
Yep.
And now everything is amped.
Yes, definitely true.
Anyway.
So anyway, I think for me, them killing Joel was that first moment where I realized, oh, this game is a revenge story.
Yeah.
And revenge stories are tried and true narrative arcs that we have from a variety of film, television, novels, et cetera, right? So I feel like I was sort of ready to go through those tropes.
Yeah.
And what I will say is that they lean into the how, you know, violence is bad, violence is ugly, doesn't justify itself. consistently throughout the entire game. And I think the moment to me that was really the capstone or the sort of thesis clearly on screen, there's a moment when Abby's father, who is the doctor who would have tried to cure the disease by using and killing Ellie from the first game, says something like, you know, we have to kill this girl because it will make all of the horrible things that we've done justified.
Yeah.
And you and I know, as fans of Unforgiven, that...
Unforgiven.
It has nothing to do with it, right? Like, you cannot justify violence with more violence, right?
Yeah.
That seems to be the thesis. And then it just fucking goes on and on and on and hits home. And this game is extremely violent.
Yeah.
Gratuitously violent, I would argue. I don't think it justifies a lot of its violence. And I think that in an attempt to tell a story about violence, when the only thing that you can do is just kill people willy-nilly, is a losing battle. You know, I think for me, it was so frustrating when time and again, you would think, oh, Ellie has made her arc. You know, she's realized that pursuing justice to revenge Joel isn't worth the cost to your own personal life. Mm-hmm. She would experience that, and then you couldn't act upon it at all, right? If I enter a town full of other human beings, and the moment I pop my head off, they just shoot at me and I die, right? The only way that I can go through this game is to kill them mercilessly and defend myself. I don't think you're going to have a satisfying story or something very eloquent to say about what violence means if that's the only tools that I have at my disposal, you know?
Let's talk about that arc, because I went through a weird trajectory of this game where I started off like, okay, this is a Death Wish / Unforgiven / whatever. Like this is a revenge story. And then things started getting really spread out. And I was like, man, I wonder how long they're going to keep doing this. And then it got so spread out where I was like, oh, I wonder if they're making an even darker comment of some people just never learn. And we're going to show you an unflinching view of someone that's never going to learn. And I was like, okay, well, like, you know, that's not necessarily the most optimistic thing, but it's a take, you know, I'm interested to see where this goes. But then the story continues to arc, and they do a redemption arc for both main characters, which I thought was interesting as well. And I read a review by Rob Zachney, who I tend to admire quite a bit in terms of how he writes about games. He wrote a review for Vice, and one of the sentences just stuck out to me, and he was kind of making a similar point, but about that first arc, he said, nobody ever reconsiders their quest for vengeance. Everyone acts under a kind of vindictive compulsion that goes little remarked and unexamined.
Yep.
And I think part of that is true. I was willing to give the game the benefit of the doubt and say they are telling a story like Unforgiven, where this guy does not overcome his penchant for vengeance and does just partake in it. But then I don't see how that sentence that he wrote is justified by the ending of the game, which is literally Ellie walking away from revenge.
Yeah, but it's like, to me, what's so frustrating about that arc is we see it so many times, right? Like Ellie, in the very first arc, Ellie pursues Abby, and at some point she learns that Dina is pregnant, and she decides, okay, you know what? This isn't worth it. I'm going to give up my quest for revenge. I'm going to walk away, and I'm going to go help Dina, right?
Right.
And then that's not enough. Abby shows up, and you know the whole hullabaloo, and then fine, whatever, right? But she's made that decision, right? And then we have Abby's story. And Abby's arc is functionally the same thing. She's driven by revenge. She's trying to... you know, she is aiming to kill Joel, and eventually she realizes, well, maybe the people that I'm fighting actually aren't all that bad. And I think the story with the scars and, you know, Lev in particular, I think is a fun character to have around.
Yep.
I think Abby's arc, to be honest, I think is the best arc in the whole game. And I honestly would have preferred if this game had very little Ellie in it at all and was just Abby's story. I think it would have been an improvement, but I like Abby's arc. Abby's arc is exactly the same, right? She learns, she decides, I'm going to give up this quest for constant revenge. I'm going to give up working for this group that claims to be able to use violence for good, because I no longer believe that violence can be used as a force for good. And right. I'm going to go try to find the Fireflies, right?
Yeah.
So we see that arc twice. And then we see it yet a third time. And Ellie is now once again giving up everything to hunt Abby. And then she gets to Abby, and then she changes her mind again. So we functionally see that same arc three times.
Yeah.
And in none of those arcs do I feel as a player that I have any sort of amount of agency or decision-making into how that experience unfolds, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Ellie has a flashback about Joel that encourages her to change her perspective when it's convenient, right? We only see the pivotal moment of her and Joel's relationship changing that elicits her to give up her, you know, attack on Abby. We only see that when it's convenient for Ellie to have that flip. But
yeah.
I don't see any justification why she didn't have that same mental flip earlier at any other period in the story, you know?
Yeah.
It didn't happen when she's on the farm with Dina. It didn't happen when she was hunting Abby in Seattle. Like, there's a lot of other moments where there was an opportunity for Ellie to exhibit a change. And the only reason I'm shown that she ever changes is because it's just convenient for the story at that point for her to change, not because there's some, you know, important decision-making process, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It would have been, that's a good point. I mean, basically she has the flashback that is most convenient to the plot at that time.
Well, so like, let's jump way ahead, right? We'll go to the very end. Abby and Ellie are just duking it on the beach, right?
Solid Snake and Revolver Ocelot style in MGS4.
It's awesome. They're really going at it. It's great, right? You are Ellie at this moment. You cannot choose to be any other character, right? You have no agency about whether or not you play as Abby or Ellie, despite the fact that you've played as both of them for many, many hours, right?
Yeah.
You cannot opt out of fighting Abby to the death. That is not your decision. If you choose not to fight Abby, Abby will kill you then and there. You'll cut to black, you'll be dead, and then you'll restart the game back in that fight, right?
Right.
You have no agency there. What would that have looked like if the game said, we're going to make both options available to you? You can choose to stop of your own accord, or you continue and can have this Joel flashback that changes your mind. Or maybe it's okay that Abby kills you. What if that is how you die? And we've created a different storyline, right? And you've concluded Ellie's story, but guess what? You could have had an agency. You could have made that decision to take a step back, right?
Right.
That moment never really appears. So instead, what we get is the story of an Ellie who is really scarred and is suffering from like PTSD, which is, I think, totally fine. That's a legitimate storyline. But if that's going to be the arc, if that's going to be the whole thing, then I genuinely think the entire last like 4 hours where Ellie is pursuing Abby in Santa Barbara is just completely unnecessary. I think we got the version of Ellie that has suffered and has lost and is scarred, right? Like, you know, we have this scene where Ellie's on the farm with Dina and it's like picturesque and it's, you know, it's adorable. And then Ellie suffers like a severe PTSD flashback shocking moment, right?
Right.
And you get the sense that her presence around Dina's son might be putting them at risk, right?
Right.
I think that was your opportunity to really hammer home the cost. I think the game could have ended with Dina just leaving Ellie and saying like, look, I love you, but you're dangerous. And I can't be around you. And that could be the cost. I don't think we then also need to see her fingers getting bitten off and see that she can't play the guitar. You know,
it just but George, the guitar, it's a metaphor.
You could have even had that scene earlier, you know, like I like the idea of, or what if Ellie's hands are shaking because she can't play the guitar because she thinks about Joel. And when she thinks about Joel, she thinks about him dying, right? Like there's a lot of other ways that we can do that. We can see the cost. I think that they want us to wallow in that suffering a little bit. And I think by that point in the game, it's like 25 hours of playing The Last of Us, one of the most brutally violent games I've experienced. And I just don't think it's worth it when we have something like the God of War franchise that I think more elegantly talks about violence and the lineage of violence and what you bring with you in your attempt to leave that behind better than this game, from a narrative perspective, was capable of accomplishing.
I mean, I think it is, I mean, we drop Ian Bogost all the time, but this is a just a complex spun out version of procedural rhetoric. You know, you can't make any other choice in the game system. Therefore, the story is just this one track.
Right.
And it feels bad when it feels like you should have affordances, but you can't. And so if you're not into the narrative, there's very little to do about it because you can't make an alternative.
It just feels like there are certain things that, you know, if the only vocabulary you have is violence, then there's just a hard limit on what you can say about violence. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just feel like that's the case. We saw it with Spec Ops: The Line, a game that for a brief moment was a critical darling, but I think both you and I thought failed and bungled its attempt, to do that. I think maybe Far Cry 2 does it the best, God of War series maybe, but I think there's a limit to that. And that's okay. I don't think that every single video game needs to be able to tackle every single subject matter with the same deftness or interrogativeness that maybe other mediums can, or using other vocabulary. I just think that by saying, I want to make a game about violence, and then the only thing that we can enact, the only way that we can enact agency on the world is by, like, there's that scene when you're on the island where she's slicing into that guy's face like Joker, you know? And it's like, it's just so graphic and so disturbing. And I don't think it ever earns it or justifies it. And left me with a really nasty taste in my mouth, because I was seeing the same stories over and over again. You know, the theme being sort of captured by the doctor saying, oh, violence won't be justified, I think was seen again I think there's a note that you find at the aquarium in Seattle where there's like a grandfather who used to live there with his daughter and grandkid. And there's a note from the mom that's like, you're a coward, you didn't want to go fight back, and so we're leaving you here. And at this point, you can see that this aquarium is a safe space. It's sanctuary from all of the violence that's outside of it. And you see sort of what's lost. And once again, it encapsulates that theme. And it's great, and it works for that moment. But 30 hours, not necessary. You know,
necessary. I think that's the alternative, right? Because I can't say that you should not make a game about a singular theme or a story that the player cannot change, because maybe that's just the story you wanted to tell. And it's,
More power to you.
Yeah. More power to you. It could even be a visual novel. Right. But what I'm hearing is the sheer length of the game is impressive and oppressive at the same time. I mean, this game is literally two games. You could have split The Last of Us Part 2, Part A, and Part B into its own separate releases and still had two 10 to 15 hour games.
Yeah.
Which is, again, it's just it's a monstrous achievement that I was impressed by while I was playing it, because I thought when I started playing as Abby, I was like, man, they're going to have to do a lot of work to bring her around. You know, this is going to take a long time to get her to be sympathetic or to like get her to have any sort of redeeming quality. And I think eventually, for me anyway, they did it. It takes so long and you have to go through so much. And in the end, you don't have much of a choice. So if you were kind of bouncing off of it there, it's not going to fix itself by continuing to power through it.
Yep.
It's
hard not to imagine what this game would have looked like if they decided they wanted the story to be about something else. You know, like we can imagine a story where Abby is the only character that you play as, and Ellie is this ghost that's sort of hunting you throughout the entire experience, you know?
Yeah.
And you follow the same arc, right? Where Abby thinks that she's justified and thinks that she's part of a force that can use violence for good, and she realizes that she can't, right?
Right.
Or, you know, the very first game to me was a lot about, you know, Joel coming into this sort of father figure role and coming into it at the exact worst possible time to take on that mantle.
Right.
And I think if we wanted this game to be about, you know, Ellie and PTSD and trauma and the relationship with Joel, they could have just doubled down on that. You know, we could have had more flashbacks with Joel. It could have been about what that loss looks like. It could be about, you know, the strength it takes to forgive someone or leave that trauma behind. And I know that that isn't the story that they told, so it's difficult to criticize them for it, but I think it's a story that would have fit what this game was capable of better.
Yeah.
And then the other part that I just can't deny, right, is I think at the end of the day, there is a sort of pessimistic, nihilistic take on humanity that this game puts forward that I just flat out disagree with. I just don't think that human beings are that bad, you know, despite the current state of the world that we live in, right? Like with all signs pointing to we're fucked up, right? Like I just don't buy that the cycles of just gratuitous violence that we see in The Last of Us 2 would be happening at that scale. And I know a lot of people disagree with me, but I've seen that take before, you know, many times in other media. And, you know, I mean, maybe I'm getting old, but I've had my fill. I have very little appetite for people attempting to say that mankind by nature is violent and disgusting. I have very little appetite for that.
I mean, I wonder, because so much of the critique is around both the scope and also, I think, to your point, the order at which it's doled out. I mean, what if the kind of maternalistic aspect had come into the story much earlier? You know, one of the toughest parts of that game for me was seeing her walk away from the farmhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, man, you had it. Like, you made it. You survived. Yeah. You got as close as you could get to winning in this world that you live in, and you're willing to throw it all away for this vengeance, which is a pretty powerful statement about, you know, where Ellie's head is at that time.
Yeah.
But I think...
But then why did she walk away the first time?
That's what I mean. If they had flipped this or, like, excised some of that, it would have had the same meaning, but it wouldn't have been the second or third time they were doing it.
And it
still would have hit because it would have made a comment about how obsession actually works. And I think the same thing could have been done with Abby, but just in a more sped up way, you know. I don't know what the relationship is more, you know, kind of motherly, but almost like, you know, sisterly, when she actually makes a connection with Lev. But I think that gives those characters different dimensions that you only get 10 hours into the story for each of them.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed. And I know that a lot of people, you know, a lot of people have criticized the Abby portion in particular. Like I said, I think some of that is driven by just plain old fashioned misogyny. But I do think that Abby's storyline and just as a character is better realized, more interesting than Ellie is in this game. You know, I think I enjoyed the Abby sequences more than the Ellie sequences by a long shot. And I also just wonder if, you know, if they had released the Snyder cut, you know, and it was just the Abby scenes,
right,
if I would have walked away with a more cheery experience to all.
I mean,
this.
I think Abby has more agency. You know, her story is more about her. There was that really tough scene where Mel calls her a piece of shit. You know, it's like you're just a terrible person, and you know, she just says it with so much definitiveness that you can tell that Abby starts to internalize it, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Ellie is constantly being built up by other people.
Yep.
You know, she's the one that does have a support system, and her story is the tragedy of walking away from what actually, if you zoom out far enough, is a pretty good life. Whereas Abby's story is a story about trying to assemble a good life when you don't have one.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it makes Ellie a tougher person sometimes to feel sympathy for, because she's walking away from something that's good versus fighting to construct something out of badness, like Abby is.
Yeah.
But I mean, like that stuff. I mean, the other thing is too. Just I mean, we didn't even really talk about this, but I think the writing in this game is extremely strong in my opinion.
Yeah.
And the performances are extreme. I mean, this game felt like a this game felt like an HBO show. And I think it almost is. I don't think that's a mistake. I think this is kind of where media is at in this time and place, where we want these serialized story arcs that kind of take place over roughly 10 to 20 hours, you know, like a season of 10 episodes or something.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like this game was constructed in such a way that fit that.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, it felt like this is their version of whatever, Game of Thrones or Mad Men.
Well, I mean,
or,
maybe they should have hired whatever, like a actual showrunner then. You know?
I mean, it kind of
broken it up in that way.
It does kind of feel like that. I was thinking about that because it took me a long time to play the game, just, you know, because of life. And I was like, man, I seem to be playing like 1 to 2 hours of this game every time I play it. And it almost feels like that's kind of how it should be played from a narrative perspective.
Well, then from that perspective, maybe they should have had it be, you know, day one Ellie, day one Abby, day two yeah. Ellie, day two Abby, instead of all of Ellie, all right. of Abby, back right. to Ellie, back to Abby again, Ellie right. again. You know, right. like it's just
right.
the way that it's constructed doesn't feel like it's constructed in the way that you and I might consume prestige television, but right. certainly from like a narrative arc and length of time, absolutely.
Yeah. Gosh, I don't even know. I guess I was just saying that I am consistently impressed by the quality of the writing and the performances and how much yeah. for me, and I'm usually not this person, like for me, it was the minute to minute performances were able to soothe some of the bigger plot points that were bumping me. And yeah. so I just to call that out, like, I think this is one of the best acted games I've ever yeah. played.
I would
just
agree with
one
that.
Of the best acted things yeah. I've seen in years, you know?
And even the scenes with Joel, like there's a scene with Joel and Ellie flashing back where Joel and Ellie have the conversation about, you know, what he did and how he lied yeah. to her and didn't tell her that, you know, I think Ellie's response is like, my life could have meant something. There's a yeah. great line Ellie delivers saying that, you know, I don't know if I can forgive you, but I want to try. Like,
yeah.
really well delivered. I think Ashley yeah. Johnson, Troy Baker, he has these moments as Joel that are just heart-wrenching because yeah. he feels like an old, tired man who yeah. wants to muster up just enough strength to mend a relationship, you know?
Yes.
And it yeah. is incredibly well delivered. It really is some of his best work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, that adds to my frustration because I want those performances to build up into something. You know, I want right. it to crescendo into something and not sort of overstay its welcome, you know?
Right. I just, because I was so impressed by it, there's one last thing that I can't quite explain it completely because it's not like the mocap actors and the voice actors were, they didn't try for a one-to-one likeness of them, you know, yep. but the quality of this thing is such that the uncanny valley in this game was so weird. You know, every time I was looking at a scene, my brain was like, these are real people. And then my other part of my brain were, oh, these are complete digital constructs. And so it just kind of freaked me out because they've gotten to a point where the characters seem so human-like, in their, and not just, and I don't mean in the looks, but I mean in how they're writing them and how their mannerisms are. I mean, it's just such an eerie thing that they've done, but it's, I don't know. It's just, it's the top of what they can do. And then to your point, the question then becomes, what next? What do they do with this? I mean, what if they were to point this tech in a totally different direction?
Yeah.
Because in a weird way, they make highly traditional video games. I mean, we just talked about this. You know, this is point and shoot. These are two vectors intersecting and something disappears, you know, yeah. And so I wonder what the quality of this writing and the quality of the capture and clearly the willingness to try to tell a story, but saddling it with a shooter is, I mean, it really does feel like we've reached the limit. I mean, what if they did something totally different, you know?
Yeah.
Like whatever Ken Levine is doing, like what if, what are they, you know, do some narrative thing that is way different from what you're doing, or do some sort of adventure game or something. It's just fascinating to watch the evolution of this and wonder if it is an evolution or if it is just a specialization.
Yeah, the pinnacle of this one thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, for Naughty Dog, I mean, I can't imagine them doing another Last of Us, at least anytime soon.
Yeah, in seven years, we'll be talking about The Last of Us Part 3.
I mean, Uncharted 4 had a pretty satisfying conclusion to that arc, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you want to see out of this team? I mean, to me, it feels like the right way to go is make some small experimental works and see what sticks. You know, like they clearly have a team that is incredibly talented, you know?
Yes.
I'm lucky to know a couple of people that work on those teams. I would love that for them to continue to sort of double down on that expertise of strong system design, great animation, contextual animation. I think there's something really cool there. I just want it to find a home, you know, have that netting be built around something that feels stable and can move towards another sort of fruitful group of games, you know? And I don't know, it feels like where they're at right now, they've sort of reached that limit in terms of what they're capable of with the sort of core of what their games are.
Right. It's weird. I mean, it's...
Would you want another Last of Us?
I mean, I've been going back and forth on that because it's more like... I think what I liked about this game so much was just their willingness to invest so much in the narrative. And I don't know. I mean, I think the Last of Us stuff is interesting, but I think I might be just as well satisfied with a game that cares so much about its characters, but just a different setting, different reason, you know?
Yeah.
I don't, there's something about it though. I think they really could go further into the, you know, you're now dealing with a group of people that have grown up in the apocalypse versus Joel, who's like trying to find his way in the
apocalypse. Oh, I thought you were talking about us.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that is definitely, I mean, we didn't even talk about this, but like, this is a rough game to play at this time and place.
That's probably the other issue I had with it.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. I mean, like I ended a lot of nights playing this game just kind of like, man, you know, like this is bleak and there's more than a few parallels. And then when you hear the rhetoric around the game, it's, you know, and I mean, you know, for all of the criticisms that I've read, you know, even the legitimate criticisms about how some of the characters, especially the underrepresented characters, are somewhat of a means to a plot end, I think I'm still willing to commend Naughty Dog for unashamedly picking characters that are not just, you know, your bald-headed white space marine guy.
Sure.
And I think some of those story arcs are interesting because they do touch on it, the struggles that, you know, someone who is, you know, a non-traditional member of, you know, a homogenous society would face.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think you could do that in another setting, and I might be just as satisfied, you know, or you could do that in a way that explored a different theme in this world, and that would be there.
They should give them some licensed games. Like, I would love a Naughty Dog Dune video game. That would be sweet. I mean, if I'm just like pie in the sky here, you know what I mean?
Right.
Give them something that feels like it's untouchable, and they could probably do a decent job of it. You know?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to hand anyone, like, you're not going to give anyone a license to a game. Like, look, everyone and their mother has tried to make a Star Wars game. Some have been good, some have been bad. How many people have made, like, a sweet Dune video game, you know?
Well, even the Star Wars thing. That's why it's so frustrating that the Amy Hennig project never saw the light of day.
That's true, yeah.
There's still a lot of her DNA in that studio, I feel like. And so it's just, what could you have done in a different universe? But I really do think that, I mean, you certainly have colored my opinion on this, but I really do think there is something, there is a mechanical shackle on this format, and you can either choose to perfect it or you can totally break it and try a fully different format. And I don't know if the type of game that that I would be interested in them making is supported by the systems that drive this game.
Yep.
But, you know, sometimes an extremely well-done genre piece is satisfying, and maybe this is what the studio is now. I don't know. I'm much more ambivalent about this game than I was most of their other games that I've played.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a time where I think it was after Uncharted 3 where I'm like, I'm never playing another Naughty Dog game, because I was just I was done. You know, I was like, okay, I kind of know what the studio is doing, and nothing seems to change. And then it might have actually been Last of Us, and then Uncharted 4 happened, and I was like, wow, they really stepped it up. They did something different, and now it feels like this is another junction point where it's like I kind of feel like I know what the studio does, and maybe I'll play whatever is interesting, but I don't feel the need to play every single thing unless there is some sort of sea change.
Maybe it's a leadership change, you know, maybe it's like a lot of creative direction that just goes into different places, you know.
I mean, there's obviously, you know, we are on the precipice of a console change, and they probably already have some stuff kicking around. And I think it would be cool to see, you know, to see the experiments. I mean, not to like overly psychoanalyze this game too much, but this game, and I think part of this is colored by the responses on Twitter that you mentioned, you know, Druckmann and Baker and everyone else. There's almost a certain, I don't know, I get this sense of, there's almost a sense of a chip on their shoulder for some reason, you know, a defensiveness where we have to prove ourselves. So we're going to make a 35-hour game, and it's going to be just as dramatic as anything you'll see on HBO, and it's going to blow everything else out of the water. And then not only that, we can't let it stand on its own. We then have to like get into flame wars on the internet about it. And it's like, and I just don't understand where that defensiveness is coming from, because clearly these people are masters of the craft.
Oh yeah. Look, if you build a car from scratch, you have made an astounding human accomplishment. You do not then also have to win the race, you know?
Right. Yeah, there is a strange defensiveness that perhaps I'm reading too far into it. Perhaps it's just a thing that is in society these days, but I think it would be freeing almost to not have to feel like you had to justify this work, which, by the way, is one of the top-selling games of all of the PS4, you know, like there's... Yeah. By any conceivable metric, this game is an incredible accomplishment, and yet I feel like there is this weird defensiveness around it that is seeking to justify its existence. And sometimes it's nice just to throw that stuff away and say, you know, we're going to create something totally different, or we're going to do vignettes, or whatever, you know.
Well, I think the flip side of that coin, or rather like the extension of that statement, is make lower, smaller budget games. Because part of that defensiveness is on the sense that we have to justify it economically, you know, like we have spent years crunch and millions of dollars. We can't afford for a game to be anything but a genre defining hit, and that's just, I don't think that's a safe space for creative expression for any group of creators.
Not sustainable anyway.
Man,
what a game, am I right?
What a game. I gotta say, I picked up Final Fantasy VII again after playing The Last of Us 2. What a breath of fresh air Final Fantasy VII is, folks. Wow.
We're gonna do a debrief on that one pretty soon, but you are coming to some... that one's gonna be a fun conversation too, because speaking of kind of meta commentaries on, you know, the creation of a game and justifying existence, like there is some stuff in that game, and you are coming upon it very soon.
Oof.
And it'll be good to talk through that stuff.
I mean, I found my boy Red 13, so I feel like mission accomplished. You know what I mean?
I could just stop playing now.
I'm done.
Well, for those of you that have stayed for the whole time, we appreciate it. Experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. You can find all of our old podcasts there, as well as wherever you find podcasts, those fine podcast vendors out on the streets. You know who they are. Give them a ring. If you like the show, tell a friend. How about that?
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.